TUC Radio San Francisco, Time of Useful Consciousness. Ralph Nader on technology. Speaking on a PA system powered by solar energy, Ralph Nader gave this speech at the annual Soul Fest at Real Goods in Hopland, California. It was August of 2000, and an audience of 1,500, mostly young people, had braved 100-degree heat to hear the presidential candidate of the Green Party. 4 years earlier, he had received the highest percentage of votes in this area of Northern California. Against the setting of exhibits for solar, wind, and water technologies, as well as construction, garden, and farm practices, Nader gave a compelling talk on the development and ownership of current corporate technologies and their impact on the Earth. He also gave some of the reasons why we do not have these alternatives in place, even though they could rescue us and the Earth. Ralph Nader.
Good to be here again. I was here 2-3 years ago, and I can see the sustainable sub-economy here is growing. You saw me arriving here in a little car. It was not powered by General Motors, that's for sure. I want to say a few words today about technology, because what we're trying to do here is to demonstrate the distinction between a people's technology and a corporate technology, the difference between a democratic technology and a technology bred by multinational corporations. And this is really part of the whole environmental struggle and the struggle for health, safety, preservation of the planet, sustainable economies, and allowing biodiversity to encourage human diversity in terms of ideas and innovations. There are certain criteria that corporate technology imposes on us. One is that it delivers very short-term profits and camouflages long-term costs. That's coal, that's oil, that's gas, that's nuclear power. The second is that it centralizes control over the technology in a few hands, corporate hands, and makes it very difficult for people to decentralize it. Again, you see, that's chemical agriculture, that's fossil fuels, nuclear power, the various technologies that are swarming over our country, motor vehicle production, and it's a centralized power. For example, one of the reasons why corporations have never liked solar energy is that it is inherently decentralized. It's inherently in abundant supplies, you know, 3 billion years worth, we're told. And it's very difficult to monopolize, to cartelize, or to embargo. Years ago, during the gasoline lines and the oil crisis in the 70s, I would say to people around the country, you know, one way to get solar energy quick is to make sure that Exxon owns the sun. If Exxon owns the sun, that give it solar energy. But that is the problem with solar energy as far as corporations are concerned. Too accessible, too decentralized, not subject to control, and infinite in source. A third criteria is that corporate technology has to attach itself to political power in order to get the protection of the government, subsidies, handouts, bailouts, all kinds of immunities and privileges to entrench the technology further. Fourth is the propaganda that attaches to the technology. When corporations want a massively reliant surface transportation system to be on highways, because they want to sell cars, gasoline, tires, etc., they have to get political power in Sacramento, in Washington. They have to take over the government and make sure the government does what they want, not what the government should do for the people. And you've experienced this in California with your bumper-to-bumper traffic. Well, back in the 30s and 40s, General Motors, Firestone, and an oil company, got together and they said, how do we sell more cars, tires, and gasoline? Simple. We buy up the electrified trolley systems, the mass transit systems, in 28 big metropolitan areas in the country, tear them up, tear up the tracks, and then push for more highways. And that's what they did. And they, in effect, destroyed the largest electrified trolley system in the world, in Southern California, in the Los Angeles area. And they, this time, though, they were caught. And the Justice Department prosecuted them right after World War II and convicted them of criminal violations of the antitrust laws. Well, of course, by then, all the damage was done. And every day, people go to work now suffering from that conspiracy. Chugga, chugga, chug, bumper to bumper traffic, more pollution, more expense to transport yourself, more risks of accidents, more road rage, more time wasted, all traced to the highway lobby dominated by auto, tire, and oil that smashed the effort to develop a more balanced mass transit system with today's super exciting technology that is still on the shelf. We're not talking about, you know, gas guzzling buses here, much more elevated sky trains, etc. Well, you know what the judge fined GM in 1949? $5,000 after they were convicted. Now, this is an example of how corporations get their way with their choice of technology, which favors their profits, but which by almost every standard is inferior to alternative technologies that don't happen to cater to the kind of corporate control and profits that their technology caters to. And that kind of push requires the seizure of government power on their side, turning government against its own people. It requires government to front for the highway lobby instead of public transit, to front for the oil, gas, and coal lobby instead of for solar energy and energy efficiency. The front for the DuPonts and Monsantos and Novartises in terms of biotechnology and more traditional toxic pesticides and herbicides, instead of organic agriculture, instead of respecting the biodiversity of the soil and its environment and letting it teach us as to how we can grow and harvest crops that are safe, clean, that don't damage farm workers and farmers, and don't lend themselves to soil contamination or erosion. Now, that's the difference between a corporate. So we have, and now we have a new frontier, a devastatingly risky frontier, biotechnology and GMO foods, and the elaboration of the most ambitious move in the history of corporations. Corporations have strong commercial interests, and when they have too much power, they can damage other human value systems like safety, health, sustainability, justice, respect for infants and children's safety, respect for future generations, sustainable oceans and forests and the like. When they have given too much power, that commercial interest is like a juggernaut. It doesn't brook opposition. It runs roughshod, destroys, undermines all these other non-commercial value systems that spell a civilized and sustainable society. That's why every major religion in the world has always warned its believers into not giving too much power to the merchant interests, the commercial interests. And now, of course, We don't have a bunch of small businesses running the economy. The small businesses are franchisees, largely, with a few notable exceptions. We have giant corporations merging every week, big banks, insurance companies, HMOs, telecommunication companies, computer companies, auto companies, aircraft companies, food processing, agribusiness companies like Cargo and Continental Grain in the process of merging. And so fewer and fewer giant global corporations are controlling technology, labor, capital, and governments. They always have to have governments to get their way. Because if they don't control government, if the people control their government, then the government as a representative institution can counteract the excesses and abuses of these corporate interests. That's the principal counteracting force that will liberate opportunities for people to innovate and create in the private economy and the society. So you have these three criteria that entrenches the technology that can be called the technology of destruction and death. The trajectory of multinational corporate technology in this world, if it's allowed to continue without challenge, without countervailing alternatives, the trajectory is omnicide. It's omnicide. It's just like the way the big whaling ships. The only time they will stop is when there are no longer any whales. Commerce uber alles, the total imperative. This is what is the mandate of GATT, WTO, and NAFTA. It is the supremacy of the commercial imperative of international trade and their giant corporate patrons over all of these other value systems. And because our country signed on to those trade agreements are federal law, enforceable. And now we are tied into a whole autocratic system of governance in the world called WTO, NAFTA, that subordinates existing health, safety standards in the environment, workplace, and marketplace, and chills the expansion and improvement and advancement of these standards, because all of these proposals of health, safety, environment have to clear an obstacle called least trade restrictive. And it's interpreted, you want to start some ordinance here to control a chemical, and it's being imported, country is knocked on the door by the chemical company, the country takes the U.S. to these courts in Geneva, Switzerland, and in secret, absolutely, no doors open, no press, no citizens, three trade judges who moonlight with corporations on the side decide who wins, whether it's the environmental regulation here or the national food labeling law or the pollution control laws or the auto safety laws or the pesticide curbing laws, whatever. If they're considered trade restrictive, trade trumps all these laws. The GATT-WTO treaty trumps all the international environmental agreements the United States has been adhering to. And this is why Seattle occurred. This is why Washington, D.C. demonstrations. Because more and more people are finding out how the world is working according to giant corporations. And they don't like it. They don't like it. These giant corporations are on these giant corporations are on a collision course with American democracy, and American democracy's been losing. And it's time to make sure that it's the corporate power that begins to lose, and American democracy begins to win. Every area of environmental degradation and contamination destruction, you can link it to a certain technology. Or you can link it to a certain agrarian practice like tobacco growing in the third world, which replaces growing fruits and vegetables and is extremely destructive of local forests. Anyway, you can link it to corporate technology in one fashion after another. And then on the other hand, there are better ways to do it. The problem is the better technologies don't have the corporate power behind it, and they don't have the government behind it for the most sake. The Department of Agriculture, I always call the Department of Agribusiness, because basically they're serving the Cargills, the IBPs, the ADMs, the Monsantos, the DuPonts, the Novartis, the giant seed companies, which have been merging. They don't serve the small farmer. They don't protect the farm laborers. The farm laborers still don't even have the protections that all other labor has in this country under the Fair Labor Standards Act. They represent big corporations and big technology. And here you can see the alternatives. You just make a list of them all. Industrial hemp, which, by the way, is legal to be imported into this country, but farmers can't grow it. here. And let me tell you, one of the benefits of a certain campaign is once and for all to get this off the DEA prescribed list so that farmers can grow the most versatile plant in the history of the world. General McCaffrey, the boss of the failed war on drugs, keeps saying, he says, industrial hemp is a stalking horse for marijuana. Well, first of all, it dilutes marijuana if they're side by side and across pollination, but he wouldn't know that. But one third of 1% THC? Why, even General McCaffrey couldn't get high on that. And you go around, you make a list of all these technologies that are here in the exhibits, and it's important to ask, how can we link them together? Solar thermal, the plummeting price of photovoltaics, almost all being done while our tax dollars in the billions are still going to subsidize oil, gas, coal, and nuclear, and a relative pittance from the Department of Energy to support and advance solar energy. Now, can you imagine a country that turns this around fast? First of all, it'll have enormous ability to assist the world and to export to the world these kinds of products. You know what the world thinks of our exports, the average person in the third world? Here's what they say. You say United States of America, and the first thing that comes to mind for most of these people, unfortunately, are tanks, jet planes, napalm, landmines, weapons, small arms, weapons. And wouldn't it be nice if we helped lead the world in self-reliance by giving them by giving them the credibility that they are denied to this kind of people's technology. So there's an interesting book that has a lot of these examples called Natural Capitalism by Paul Hawken, Amory, and Hunter Love. And some people think it's a little too optimistic, but the thesis of the book, and they give examples on the ground where it's working, is that we can get 10 times the work out of our natural resources within the next 20, 30 years than we're getting now. You know, I mean, can you imagine what that means? Zinc, iron, copper, timber, fuel, etc. That we can, in effect, cut the waste by over 90%. And that book never was reviewed in the New York Times or Washington Post when it came out last September. You know, it's like the big media. The CEOs, the head of the big media, have demonstrated to reporters and camera crews and producers that good journalism is bad business. And good news is not promotionable. They don't promote good news. Your late evening news on television is a perfect example of that. No matter where you are in the country, the formula is roughly the same. They start out with a few street crimes, and then they give you a peek at the weather. The first of three weather. That's all on 30 minutes, right? 9 minutes ads, 4 minutes weather, 4 minutes sport, 3 minutes street crime, 1 minute contrived impromptu chit-chat between the anchors, the prescribed animal story, and maybe a little note on some finding in the New England Journal of Medicine. They say, and that's what happened in your town and city tonight. Well, you know, they're not giving us the good news. They're not giving us the innovation. They're not giving us the solutions that are on the shelf with only a very few people and companies trying to get them off the shelf and into improving our daily lives and our ability to turn this planet over to future generations with our head held high rather than to be seen by future generations as perhaps the last generation that had to give up so little in terms of sacrifice, in order to achieve so much. You pick up a plane in Washington and cross it across and fly it across the country, you will see the unbelievable devastation of the last 150 years of corporate plunder and pillage, the strip mines, the land erosion, the toxic waste dumps, The environmental racism, where people of color happen to always find themselves next to the pollution and the toxics and the depositaries. And if you go right across the country and you see the wild misuse of land resources, you see the rampant sprawl that wastes so much of our time and costs us so much in energy, you see the water diversions, you see the air pollution inversions, etc. I mean, it is a terror. You see the strip mines in Montana, the copper mines and the strip mines in the Dakotas and West Virginia. You see the hollows in West Virginia full of the tops of mountains, which are to this day being dynamited by the coal companies. They're dynamiting the tops of mountains to get at the coal so they can ship it to New York, so all these skyscrapers can waste the energy and continue to buy the coal as they build more and more buildings that are not energy efficient, when they don't have a single reason other than just doing things that are short-term profitable for building buildings that use one-fifth of the energy that many of these big buildings now use. Our land has been scarred. Our land has been poisoned. Our land and water and air have been contaminated, all for short-term profit, all for simply giving corporation CEOs an ability to say, we're doing it for the stock price. We're doing it for the shareholders. And they're doing it for their stock options and their executive compensation balances. It's amazing how huge devastation comes from petty greed. Think about what all this means together. When you put the pieces together, and what it means together is one of the greatest causes in the history of the world, which is basically to save the planet, to have a sustainable economy, to advance the health and safety. To increase democracy, which is the best mechanism ever devised to solve problems and prevent injustices. To give you the opportunity to develop your own cultural diversity around these different people's technologies and solutions to real life problems for real people. Think about it. And think about it in your own temperament. You may want to think about it poetically, artistically, graphically, digitally. You may want to think about it geographically, economically, politically, philosophically, religious. Think about it in all these ways and then come back together. And you'll see from one year to another the power of this sustainable idea, the power of it confronting the corporate juggernaut of short-term thinking and short-term profits driven by a monetized mind at the top of these corporations. You come up against them, you will prevail, just like so many people in our history, up against enormous odds, fighting slavery, women's right to vote, trade union movement, populist progressive revolt 100 years ago that swept the country and gave us the biggest political reform, the civil rights, women's rights, civil liberties, consumer, environmental, disability rights, gay, lesbian rights movements. Think of the uphill fight, you see, and you got to think of it in terms of bringing the best in your mind together. Because let me admit to you, and I hope you will admit to me, that we have been growing up corporate from the time we were little children. We have looked through at the world through corporate eyes because that's about all we see. When we look at cars, we see them the way the companies want us to look at them. We don't see them as unsafe and polluting and so on, as was the case years ago. I grew up corporate looking at cars the way GM wanted me to look at them. I was about 5 years old at the World's Fair in New York, and the biggest exhibit was General Motors, called the Futurama or something like that. And they had all kinds of razzle-dazzle new cars, electric cars and turbine cars and so on. And looking back on it now, my question to General Motors is, you still haven't done it from 1939 to now. But I remember at the time I ran around very excited in and out of all this huge exhibit shouting to my parents, GM, GM, GM. Little did GM know that when when I stopped growing up corporate and started growing up civic, let's say, citizen, thinking for ourselves, not looking through the lenses of the corporations, all kinds of things can happen for the betterment of human beings. Talk it up. Talk it up. We spend too much time inhibiting ourselves from engaging other people on matters that are serious. And let me tell you, the only way people can successfully pursue happiness as a society is beforehand to pursue justice. And that involves some serious discussion. And it doesn't have to be a chore. It doesn't have to be a drag. It can be real fun. Because I think justice is real fun, because without justice, there's no happiness. So, we have to raise our level of expectation. The principal controlling process in the history of the world, whether it's done by brute force, propaganda, Orwellian language, whatever, is to control people's expectation level. And if you control them, you control their behavior, you engage them in passivity, surrender, you can't fight City Hall, que sera, sera type mentality. Raise the expectation level, become your own personal ambassador to your own widening circle of friends and neighbors, co-workers, and acquaintances and relatives, and move it out. Well, there are, let's say there's 1,000, 1,500 people here. You reach each 100 people in the next few months, and 1,500 times 10 is 15,000, times 10 is 150,000, and they start talking it up, and you'll show those media moguls that sustained, informed, inspired, motivated word of mouth is still the most credible and the most achieving form of communication yet. Thank you very much.
That was Ralph Nader, the longtime consumer advocate, anti-corporate campaigner, and presidential candidate of the Green Party. He was recorded in August of 2000 at the annual Soul Fest at Real Goods in Hopland, California. The full speech was an hour long, and you can get the tape for $12 from TUC Radio. For a credit card order, call toll-free 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or send us your $12 check to TUC Radio, Box 41009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. My name is Mariah Gilardin. Thank you for listening.